Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I love our fans. Think it's unfortunate, and I'm not calling them out, but it is disappointing. Kind of pisses me off, especially because Philly is considered a sports town. So, you know, they've always shown up, and I don't think that should happen.
Joel Embiid upset with 76ers fans, saying there were too many Knicks fans in their home arena during the Game 4 loss. I want to talk some NBA, and the guy I want to talk with is NBA senior writer, ESPN, Baxter Holmes, joining us. Do you often hear players who complain about the visiting team taking over the arena?
Nah, it's kind of rare. You know, when I covered the Lakers for ESPN, I would hear it from time to time on the road. You know, they have a lot of fans in other cities, and it's kind of par for the course of some of the legacy teams like the Celtics, the Lakers, you know, and then you'd see individual players who had huge followings, guys like Steph Curry. But, you know, Joel's point, I think, is kind of interesting. I mean, look, New York is right there. It's the playoffs. The fans are obviously going to go. And it's been a spicy series. It's been really fun to follow. I've been enjoying it.
I was watching Jalen Brunson go off, and I thought, gosh, I've seen a dimension to him that I did not expect in the playoffs. Are you surprised at how well he is playing and how good the Knicks look right now?
Well, you know, it's amazing when you think of the Mavericks. You know, if they had paid more and would have kept Brunson, what they would look like. Obviously, it's, you know, kind of revisionist history. But look, he has just really ascended, and it's a great story. You know, his dad goes back there, and you know, tons of history with Tibbs as well. And then you look at the Nova trio, the Villanova trio with Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, and Dante DiVincenzo. And the chemistry that they have, obviously going back many years, and how well they've played together. And, you know, seeing the Garden kind of come alive during these games, you know, the NBA does better when some of its major market teams, you know, do well. I'm a big believer in the idea, and I know David Stern used to talk about this a lot, and it's still true in the league office, that a rising tide floats all boats. And so seeing the Knicks being back in a way, you know, it's good for league business. I think it's good for the league in general, and it's fun to see MSG rocking again.
Biggest surprise so far for you in the playoffs?
Well, you know, I'm talking to you from Phoenix, and I got to say, I've been covering the Minnesota Phoenix series, which wrapped up last night, and I am surprised at how poorly Phoenix showed throughout the course of that series. You know, look, all credit to Minnesota. Their defense was ferocious. Anthony Edwards really planted his flag as one of the faces of the NBA, a superstar talent. But, you know, given the star power that the Suns possessed in Durant, Booker, and Beal, to have just such a poor showing, and really for some of these games, I mean, last night was competitive, but for some of them just to not be competitive, that was surprising. I didn't expect that to be this series to be a sweep.
Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Suns, he came in with such a flurry, Baxter, that people in Portland in particular were looking at him going, gosh, I wish we had an owner who was engaged and was spending money. And, you know, what does he do now? Because he has Beal and Durant, and, you know, potentially may need to do something there.
Yeah, look, I mean, he is the head of a mortgage giant, United Wholesale Mortgage in Michigan. And, you know, I say this tongue-in-cheek, but it's also the truth. He mortgaged the team's future to get Durant and to get Beal. They don't have much in the way of draft picks for the next several years. You know, they're over the second apron of the luxury tax, so they're further limited by their maneuvers to get guys and add depth around those big three, which is really what the issue is. They don't have depth around those guys. You know, I was at practice. I've been at practices and availabilities, and they keep harping on the fact that, you know, it's their first year together, first year with a coaching staff. They need more time. They need to get healthy, so on and so forth. And that's really their only hope right now, because there's not a lot they can do. They're stuck in many ways because of how all in Ishbia went in trying to get these guys. They don't have any flexibility moving forward, really.
I'm looking at, you know, the Thunder as the one seed, the Nuggets, the Timberwolves, and of course, from a Portland perspective, Baxter, you know, it gives some hope for small market teams. But what can we learn by watching the Thunder, the Timberwolves, and the Nuggets, you know, operate in a league that really is controlled by players?
You know, I love that you brought this up, because I was thinking about this last night as I was watching the game, right? You have one team, you know, the Suns, that is, you know, had kind of followed the recent fad of let's just get some superstars together and they'll figure it out, versus a team in Minnesota that, you know, a lot of their play. I mean, Anthony Edwards obviously was a, you know, superstar that they drafted. I know they brought in Rudy Gobert, but, you know, you mentioned it. Oklahoma City, that is largely a team of homegrown talent. You know, the Warriors were that way. I know they're kind of a larger market team. And Denver, obviously, you know, a team that drafted their own talent. And I think the super team era of like just trying to, you know, get guys and make it work, I don't think that, you know, look, the league is a copycat league and there's trends. I think it's over in some ways. It's risky. It hasn't worked in some high-profile instances. You know, teams going all in, you lose all your flexibility if you have to trade a ton of draft picks. I think the model now, and it's really playing out that I expect teams to follow, is draft well, develop well, and build around the edges, and try to maintain a core that with continuity and experience can grow together and become something, you know, become something special, hopefully. And it doesn't matter if it's a large market or a small market. It really comes down to the skill and expertise in the front office and their commitment to drafting and developing well.
Baxter Holmes, senior writer, ESPN, is with us. All right, who do you like right now in the West? Can anybody knock Denver out, or how do you see the West unfolding?
Yeah, you know, here's how I always think about the playoffs, right? I look at a team, and, you know, I was taught this in the NBA a long time ago. Just you look at a team and you say, can any other team beat them four times in seven games? Not can they take one off of them or even two, but can they beat them four times in seven games? And all season, I have not felt that there's a team in the West or in the league, frankly, that can take four out of seven from Denver. They have continuity. Jokic is historically incredible. I don't know what else to say. Like, he's on another level. So I think it's going to be really hard. That said, I do think Minnesota presents a pretty interesting matchup. Obviously, I'm presuming that the Nuggets get past the Lakers. But I think that, you know, that's going to be an interesting matchup. I could see that series going maybe, you know, six games, maybe seven, depending on how that shakes out. But I like that. I'm not sure how Oklahoma City is going to fit into things. Like, I don't, you know, I ultimately think Denver is going to come out of the West. That's a long answer to your question.
Yeah, and I look at that and I think, gosh, great. You could see them coming years ago, and here they are now, and they're just the layers and the star power that they have make them formidable. The Lakers, you brought them up. What's their move now, or what happens to that franchise?
Oh, man. You know, I honestly don't know what their path forward to trying to be a contender again is. You know, LeBron, I expect, I want to say that I think he has the possibility of opting out this summer and then signing for a longer deal. And, you know, they have, look, they've had a hard time, obviously, getting past Denver. But LeBron is, for as great as he's been at this point in his career, and, you know, Anthony Davis, like, there's just been so much inconsistency. The roster's often been poorly constructed, poorly fit. I don't, you know, and I don't look at them as saying, like, oh, they have a bunch of great young players that are going to really develop well over the years and whatnot. So I don't know. You know, I look at other teams, and I'm not sure where the Lakers go to try to ascend above them, especially as the West continues to seemingly get better and better. You know, we look at, you know, you talked about it. You look at Minnesota, you look at Oklahoma City, like, they're coming. You know, Sacramento's tough. It's going to be real challenging for them. And San Antonio is only going to get better with Wemby. So So I'm not sure what their path forward is, to be honest with you.
Victor Wembanyama's rookie year. How did that go? As far as, you know, as compare it to, you know, best case, worst case, feels like it mostly worked out for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, the team was not very good, but we knew that it wasn't going to be a winning year for them. They didn't have enough, and he's, you know, super young. Like, it was what it was, but he was incredible. And I will, you know, he came in with a ton of hype. Like, a guy that big, that mobile, being able to do that much, and pretty much from the jump, he was fabulous. But the thing that was really interesting to me was from the halfway point of the season on, it really looked like he learned and kind of realized, like, I'm better than, you know, most every player I'm playing against. You know, like, I'm this, and more to the point that the NBA is not that hard. You know, you can come in and have all these expectations or whatever, but there were nights, and especially in some of those Denver matches, where he kept blocking Jokic over and over. And I think he was kind of realizing, you know, I mean, there's that point in the end of, I want to say, the Matrix, where, like, Neo kind of realizes he's one, and he can, you know, beat the bad guys pretty easily. And there were times, like towards the second half of the season, where I felt like Wemby was kind of realizing that, you know, and he was putting up stat lines that just did not exist before him. So, look, they need obviously to build more around him. They need more talent. He alone is not enough. But my gosh, he's going to be, if he's not already, like, an unstoppable, unsolvable player. Like, I don't know what you do to counter him. And if he learns more, like, my goodness, it's scary what he could become.
Milwaukee's got its hands full. Damian Lillard and Giannis both doubtful for Game 5. In your mind, what happening right now with this Indiana-Milwaukee series, does it factor at all with Damian Lillard's long-term happiness, or, you know, whether or not he wants to get to Miami? How do you see that soap opera in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it's ugly right now because of the injuries. And that kind of paints a dark cloud. And it's just an uncertain cloud over the whole thing. You know, it's really tough knowing that Giannis isn't out there, knowing that Dame isn't out there. And I think Chris Middleton, unless they got hurt in their last game. So, you know, they don't have a chance right now with all those guys out. It's not a fair fight. I'm not sure, you know, given that this is their first year together, how that will potentially paint Damian's kind of view of things. Like, if you take it all with a big grain of salt, knowing that guys weren't healthy, or if there's something more there. I know it's obviously been an adjustment. He doesn't have the number of looks and open and shots that, you know, he was obviously used to getting for so much of his career in Portland. But I think that, you know, the biggest question is how much has he taken to, how much does he give things kind of graded on a bell curve because of the injuries? And I don't know. It's a good question, but it's definitely been an adjustment for him.
If it's Denver in the West, can anybody compete with Boston in the East, in your mind?
I don't think so. You know, I don't take part in the online predictions on ESPN.com. I always give that a pass when the editors reach out. But I've thought in my mind all year that, you know, if everybody was healthy, they'd be Denver and Boston in the finals. You know, just like Denver, there's a lot of continuity in Boston that they drafted. And the thing I think is kind of interesting is how Porzingis is the dynamic there, the way he kind of stretches the floor for them. And, you know, reminds me a little bit of when the Lakers acquired Pau Gasol in, like, what was it, 08 or something like that, and how he kind of changed the spacing and the overall dynamic on offense of that team and opened things up for other players. And it's looked like that for Boston for much of the year. You know, Miami's always going to be a feisty series for them, but I don't really see a team that I think can stop Boston from coming out of the West. And I think, you know, it'd be an interesting finals between the Nuggets and the Celtics, but I ultimately would expect, you know, in a 7-game series for the Nuggets to come out on top.
Baxter Holmes, ESPN, I'll let you get back to work. I appreciate you joining us, man. Good stuff.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care. There he is, Baxter Holmes. Gives a little hope in Portland, Stephen. Talking about building teams, building rosters. The problem I have in Portland is that you don't have the brain trust that you have in Oklahoma City and Denver and Minnesota that really assembled some real talent and put it together. But we shall see how that unfolds. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.